Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush. This is a bonus edition. Review Crush? What are we going to call this, Noel?
We should workshop that. Maybe we should put it out to the community.
Yeah, what to call these?
That's yeah.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Update, everybody. Right, Noel?
Oh, man. We're dropping it in here.
Through the magic of editing, we actually did go to Facebook and did throw the question out to people to name this. And we had a clear winner, right, Noel?
Oh, man, big time. I mean, I immediately saw it and was just like, this is it for me. I don't know about you, Chuck, but then you seem to feel the same way.
Yeah, and I think it got the most likes, too.
Okay.
So it was a clear choice. So big thanks to Rick Broidus for naming this episode, as you see in your little iTunes browser there, Crush to Judgment.
Crush to Judgment.
Not bad.
Pretty great, in fact. And shall we rejoin the show already in progress?
Let's do it.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is occasionally, as promised, I will do some little movie reviews with Emily sometimes, with Noel sometimes, my rotating co-hosts. And Noel and I both happen to have seen the movie A Quiet Place recently. So I was like, let's just get in here and rap about it for a bit. Many spoilers to come. So if you haven't seen the movie, maybe wait until you have.
What's the point of a spoiler-free review that I don't understand? Like, I read reviews for spoilers, you know?
Yeah. Or I don't read them
right.
If I don't want to be spoiled.
Exactly.
So this is obviously the new film from writer, director, and star John Krasinski, his wife Emily Blunt, and then a couple of young actors that were just terrific, Millicent Simmons and Noah Jupe. And that's kind of everybody.
Yeah.
Except
yeah.
for the one dude in the woods.
Yeah. And the monster. Which
and,
is,
yeah. yeah the monsters.
Stirs. That's right.
So... what did you think? I mean, this movie is hot shit right now.
Oh, yeah. It's doing. I saw 100 million plus.
Week, yeah. I mean, that's one reason we're getting in here is because it's sort of taken the box office by storm a little unexpectedly, maybe.
I got to say, I was disappointed that Krasinski didn't give a single knowing look directly to the camera.
As Jim.
Yeah. Just, you know.
This is Jim Halpert.
Like the monster's coming and he just kind of looks at the camera and goes, "Murr."
So I actually, one time I was at the Chateau Marmont Hotel in Los Angeles. I was meeting Hodgman there for drinks, and I was in the lobby waiting, and Krasinski, Emily Blunt, and two couples, I think, are filing out from the restaurant, and I look over, and we catch eyes, me and Krasinski, and very often when you catch eyes with a movie star like that, they immediately look the other way.
Sure.
And just are like, whatever. And he looked at me square in the face and gave me a little smile and a nod. As he kind of strolled by with his hands in his pockets and nice. Just an acknowledgement. And I tell you what, I was like, you know what? That's a fucking good guy.
Seems like a good guy.
I can tell immediately he's a good dude just by the way he acknowledged me as some rando dude.
Well, and not only does he seem like a good guy, he seems like a pretty versatile and talented guy because whatever you have to say about this movie, I thought it was wonderfully paced. It had tension like I hadn't seen in a movie like this in some time.
Yeah.
And the ensemble was beautifully directed, being such a small kind of bottle movie almost, you know? I really dug it. Plot holes aside, which we can get into in a little bit if you choose.
We'll talk about that a little bit, but I really enjoyed it. It was a tight 90 minutes, which I really appreciate these days.
Yep.
Efficiency of filmmaking. And it's one of these movies where I think I had heard a little bit about people bitching about plot holes. I was like, you know what? I'm going to check my plot hole side of my brain at the door and just try and enjoy it. And totally did.
Me too. The people I went with, actually, as soon as we left, some of them were super on board and some of them were just like punking it for the plot holes.
Right.
And I was just like not on board. I just wasn't having it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even want to rag on this movie with you guys. Typically, I would enjoy doing that. But I was able to suspend the living hell out of my disbelief for this movie and just go along for the ride. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And it was one of those movies where, and this happens sometimes, where I walk out of the movie and I'm like, how did no one ever think of doing this before? It's such a simple conceit, which is a monster in the woods that has super hearing and you will die if you make noise.
Yeah, the IMDb line is, a family is forced to live in silence while hiding from creatures that hunt by sound.
Yeah, it's such a simple idea. It's one of those that I bet Krasinski, when he thought of it, was like, holy shit, sure, like, let me start doing some Googling. This has probably been done before, but amazingly, it had not.
Yeah.
And there's so much you can do and that they do with I love movies where I imagine as soon as he had this idea, it's kind of fun to be like, all right, what world did they live in? Everywhere they go, there's a trail of sand. They play Monopoly with little felt pieces.
That's right.
Like all the little things that you have to plan out is kind of fun.
It's rife for that kind of world building, you know?
Yeah.
And every time they handle an object or there's something that could potentially make a noise, there's like a scene with like this plastic toy that has like a siren sound or whatever.
Yeah.
And the dad takes out the batteries.
Yeah.
But then you find out that the batteries were put back in and it makes this sound.
Oh, man.
From that point on, you're just like terrified at any potential little noise-making contraption of any kind, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he sets those stakes early on, and there's a tension that you can get with every little thing that can go wrong, a stick breaking or whatever, is potential death for your family.
Yeah.
And it's just such an effective little plot device.
That being said, I do not feel like they held fast and strong to these rules.
No, man, you gotta like... Trust me. I mean, we can talk about some of the, I don't know if you even know if I want to call them plot holes, but there were times when I was in there and I was like, why do you have a house with a wall of 40 framed pictures still hanging and like and lamps made of glass, like any potential thing that could make a noise, just fucking get it out of there.
Well, I have a theory because they have this basement, this like soundproof basement that was sort of his lair where he was like trying to do sciencey research.
And everyone's like, why didn't you live in there?
Why didn't you live in there? My whole thing is like, they were trying to have some sort of sense of normalcy and
family. I think
family,
so, man.
You know?
Sure. And I bet you anything that's what Krasinski would say is he didn't that would have been them giving up, is to like be like, you know what, I'm going to raise my kids in a fucking room.
Yeah, for the same reason people be like, why'd you have fucking kids in the first place, dumbass?
Yeah, well, especially that because, you know, Emily Blunt is pregnant.
Right.
That's the big reveal.
Right.
And you don't know if he slipped one past the goalie or if it was something, I don't think they would have planned it, but I mean, if they're, I don't know, maybe they've plan on repopulating the world by meeting up with other survivors.
That's true. And there is a scene, though, where when the baby is born, they have already, like, set everything up for this baby. And they have this box that they put the baby in with a little tiny baby oxygen mask.
Yes.
And, yes, I hear what you're saying, Chuck, but when that happened in the movie, everyone in the theater laughed.
Oh, really?
They put the baby in there, and then they put the little mask on, and then they closed the box. I must have just been in a very sick and twisted theater.
Was it like a nighttime viewing? Because I go to matinees.
Yeah, it was a nighttime viewing. And I think it was because, like, it just seemed kind of absurd.
Yeah.
Like, this is really going to work? Like,
right.
I'm not sure.
Like, this is their plan?
This is their plan, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely got that a little bit. But man, how tense was that birthing scene?
Yes.
Holy shit, man.
It was incredible. Good, crazy cross-cutting, where even the timeline of it was kind of like a little confusing because it was like, you know, he's off. She's by herself, his wife, Emily Blunt's character.
He's trying to save the kids.
He's trying to save the kids who are kind of lost.
Yeah.
And there's a monster in the house. And these monsters are fucking cool looking, too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard these days to design a monster that feels slightly original.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this one did a pretty good job because the... when it opened up their ear cavity or whatever to get that super hearing, way cool. And then when you saw the their heads coming apart and not coming apart, but splitting into different pieces, which was the armor.
Yeah.
And the only way she was allowed to kill these things was, you know, they of course figured out at the end the daughter has this hearing device because she's legit deaf that her dad had built for. Turns out it makes the monsters go crazy, this high-pitched thing, and that opens their head up such that mommy can take a shotgun.
Oh, that's right. So it wasn't the sound that made their heads explode like melons, right?
No, it just it made them vulnerable to like a shotgun blast.
That's right. That's right. And yeah, that's such a cool little twist. I don't even want to like dig too deep into that. That's a fun little reveal.
Well, and the end is, I like the end, man.
I like it too.
The racking of the shotgun.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was real easy afterward to be like, man, he just died.
Yeah.
And it was such a such a noble death, but also like,
why didn't he just throw some shit? Like, you know.
I was saying that, I mean, afterward I kind of poked plot holes in it for fun with myself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, why didn't you throw anything 50 feet that way? And still try and save your kids because it seemed possible. He kind of gave up pretty quickly.
He needed to do that Wilhelm scream.
I know. And also the other thing that I thought, because part of what you do is, like if I was in that situation, what would I have done to outfit the house? Mm-hmm. And what I would have done is got a something that makes a noise via electricity and run 500 feet of extension cords out into the cornfield. Yep. And if these things ever came close to the house, punch the button or plug it in.
Yeah.
And just have it make the noise.
It's true. And it's also like in his little lab or his workshop, he's got this like dry erase board that says sound bad. They don't like sound or something. And like that was his big eureka moment, you know?
That was a little hand-fisted.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, but it's just sort of like, what have you been doing all this time, dude? Like you got all this stuff out here. Like he's been making these little devices or whatever, and none of them are working right. And then his daughter is the one who kind of figures out like how to make it work.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, you are not the brightest fellow in the world. Where are you, John Krasinski?
Trust me, it's easy to look back in retrospect and say like, well, that was certainly convenient and this, I would have done that. But I think going into the movie, like a movie like this, you really just got to like park all that shit at the door and say, let me just have fun for 90 minutes.
I mean, here I am doing what I said I didn't want to do, but it does not diminish my enjoyment of this movie one bit.
That's the difference, I think, is I've seen a lot of people like shit on this movie for those reasons. And I'm not poo-pooing on it at all. I think it was a lot of fun and a really well-crafted thriller.
Because that's the thing, too. Like, there's the sound design is awesome.
Yeah.
It uses silence in a really creative way, obviously.
Yeah.
I do have a bone to pick. I felt like it was a real missed opportunity they didn't use Voices Carry by Till Tuesday as the big song at the end. That would have been fun.
They only had one song. They had the Neil Young song.
Oh, that's right. I actually saw that in another, I know what it was. It was in that show Big Little Lies. Have you seen Big Little Lies?
Yes.
There's a scene with that same song, Dancing in the Moonlight.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Great, great song.
It is a great song. And I imagine the selling point for Neil Young was like, this is a movie of silence, and this is one of the only pleasing things you will hear in this whole movie is your song.
That was a lovely moment, too. They share the earbuds.
Yeah.
And it's their one moment of they can actually experience it or whatever, you know, like the pleasure of listening to music together, you know, I don't know. It was very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. And, you know, and it was a simple pleasure because they, why didn't they live by the waterfall too?
Well, and first of all, I mean, come on.
Or at least have the baby there.
But the waterfall, like, is that really true? I could hear somebody yelling by a waterfall, I feel like.
Well.
No?
Not from behind a waterfall, okay. For sure. Yeah. That shit is loud.
Okay.
But again, once I started thinking about plot holes like that, I started reading about why that wouldn't be the case. And like, you know, he couldn't build a house behind the waterfall.
That's true.
You can't live a life behind a waterfall.
What if there was like a really cool cave back there? You know, that'd be...
Well, that would have been great.
That'd be neat.
But that ended up being kind of a neat moment when he went with the son and the son was able to yell and he showed him this little secret. And he's like, here's, you know, you can make a noise here.
Wasn't that the first time you actually heard Krasinski's speaking voice?
Yeah, I mean, those are some of the only lines of dialogue in the whole movie. This is a brave thing to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's like one of those things you could joke about, like, I bet that was a really short script.
Yeah.
But there's so much, like, you know, world
building. You still
got to
write the script.
All of the changes and the you know, the things the characters do. There's a lot. You got to really go deep with that stuff.
I imagine this was a hard script to write because when you're writing mostly stage direction, like, there are different approaches to stage direction. I've written a bunch of scripts, and I used to be way more over the top with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was told by everyone, like, just scale that shit down. But then I've heard, like, Oliver Stone writes, like, it's like a book. So maybe, you know, when you're Oliver Stone's position, you can do whatever you want. But if you're just, like, sending a script out, I've been told, like, that seems unprofessional to overwrite stage direction.
I've also heard that, like, sometimes it'll be just this very, like, poetic, like, short, like, line about, like, and he looks at her knowingly. But then the moment in the movie ends up being this, like, huge thing because of how the direction is done and how the actors interpret it and stuff. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's – I think you're kind of told to never do that stuff in stage direction to say, like, you know, he gives her a knowing look. I mean, and I think most people, when they write stuff, they're writing it as if they will direct it. Like, this is what I see in my head.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes maybe you write that stuff and then go back and remove it. That's screenwriting advice.
Good.
To a guy who's never had shit made.
Oh, come on. But you are a practiced aficionado of the art of screenwriting.
So I appreciate that. We should come up with a rating system. Should we go 1 to 10 or 1 to 4 stars or 5 stars? What do you think?
Let's just do it all thumbs. We'll just do like 6 thumbs.
Oh, all right.
I'm just joking. I don't know.
I like that.
Yeah.
How many thumbs? In tribute to Roger Ebert.
Yeah, but not up or down, just thumbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's say 5 thumbs is max.
5 thumbs total. Okay. I would give this 3.5 thumbs.
I'm giving it 3.5 thumbs. That's mm-hmm. exactly what came into my head.
Yep.
Fun movie, thoroughly enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Don't overthink it.
Nope.
Or overthink it afterward, but don't let it like spoil your enjoyment of the film.
It's fun. It's fun to chat about and like, you know, realize that a big giant movie like this can have all kinds of silly little, you know, issues like we're talking about and still be effective. You know, it's an interesting experiment.
Do you sequel this thing? What do you think?
I guess. I mean, it would be just like, you know, no, right? Because then
I think the obvious sequel would be you enlarge the world a bit and they find other people. Like a society that is having to live quiet, a community of quiet.
Well, this whole episode's been a spoiler alert, but they kill all the monsters. Isn't that sort of the implication at the end of the movie? Is that
all the monsters on their farm?
In their zone.
Yeah, I mean, from the newspaper clippings, this shit happened everywhere.
I gotcha. So it might be more like a Mad Max kind of situation for a sequel where they have to rove out and kind of hit the road.
Yeah, that would be kind of a cool movie just to make it a little bigger, and you have a community of 100 people that, that way you can, Krasinski can fill those plot holes.
Well, it's one of those things, too. You don't know where they came from. You don't know any of the origins of these
creatures.
None of the
origins.
That'd be fun to explore. It's also fun not to know. I kind of like not knowing in a way, too.
It was kind of neat. Sometimes when you explain that, it ends up being dumb. Mm-hmm. Or you open up more holes, whereas if it's just like, you know what? There are these fucking monsters, and who knows where they came from.
That's why I liked Cloverfield. The first Cloverfield movie, I liked very much. All of the unnecessary tie-in sequels that had nothing to do with the original. Well, the second one was actually cool.
Cloverfield Lane was good.
That one was good. But did you see the one that was just on straight to Netflix?
I heard that was
terrible.
Had
nothing to do with anything. They obviously just like
threw that
added
name
a
on there.
Scene at the end. Yeah, but the first one, you don't know anything about where the monster came from, really. Mm-hmm. It just kind of shows up. They have to deal with it, and it's fun.
Yeah.
That's what this movie kind of was. I liked it.
All right. So we're going to keep these short and sweet, 15 to 20 minutes. Both of us give A Quiet Place 3.5 thumbs. Not up or down.
Nope.
Just thumbs.
Just thumbs.
And
human thumbs? Monster thumbs? We could come up with a graphical system. We could have different styles of thumb depending on the movie.
What else have you seen lately? Have you seen Ready Player One yet?
I have not. Does not interest me.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw Isle of Dogs last night, though, and I loved it.
All right. That's on my list. Maybe we'll knock that one out.
Really loved that. But
all right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, Noel.
You're welcome, Chuck.
And look out in a couple of days. We got another great... legit Movie Crush episode coming out.